I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 now, Wednesday morning, September 4th. Rapidly approaching the end of the third quarter of the year, Ronald Surpass, our guest, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, consultant to many departments, and we like to pick his brain every week, talk about crime in the city. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Tommy, I was great until you reminded me it's almost time to pay the third quarter estimate taxes. You know, the Bible said that God expects 10% tithing. Mm-hmm. I think I pay a whole lot more of that to the state and federal government.
Yeah, I'm a little lax on those quarterly payments. I should and I don't. And the accountant says, well, why? And so, I don't know. Anyway, so 8 people shot in New Orleans early Sunday morning, 6 women, one of whom later died. Is this kind of thing, Chief, when it comes to crime, just an anomaly and you have spurts of violent crime like this?
You know, in the last 12 to 18 months, this might be considered an anomaly because things have been going better for the city of New Orleans and the policing and the public. But across the history of New Orleans, these are not anomalies. They happen frequently. They don't happen with a predictability, obviously, because if you could stop those shootings, wouldn't you? What it continues to show us is that people who choose to use weapons illegally are not encumbered by any fear. And that's what drives a lot of people to the question is, has the criminal justice lost on observation by people on the streets that there's a sense of consequence or there's a sense of responsibility for doing the things everybody knows you're not supposed to do, shoot at a car full of people? So it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think it's just a little bit of both.
So tell me about your thoughts on, as we approach the final month of the third quarter, on the way crime is trending in the city.
It looks like it's going to continue to go down, and that's very powerful and it's very important. But we're cautioned by a brand new Pew Research report, which once again points out that people get their sense of crime from friends and neighbors, a little bit less local media. So when national figures talk about crime going down, it washes over your city's population as if it never happened. When people are getting their crime reconciliation from what do they hear from their friends and family, that's probably the closest we get to getting a 100% picture of crime, if you will, because only half of crime in America goes reported. That's been the same since 1970s, unbroken. So on the one hand, crime data is slow, it's old, and it always trails people's perceptions. Now confidence with not only 40 years of experience, but another series of polls done by very good independent middle of the road pollsters, Pew, that says, folks, people feel crime how their neighbors talk, how their family talk, how their friends talk, and what they see in their local news. Summing that all up, this event over the weekend reminds people that we still have a long way to go before we feel safe.
What else did a Pew report show?
That local news is by and large more trusted than national news. National news trust is well below a third now. It's just the trust that American citizens have in the national media is a train wreck. It looks like a plane that's on a steep descent to land. It's just been horrible over the last 10 to 15 years. Local news, however, still continues to be something that people have more trust in. They don't trust it like you would think, but they trust it more. So when you think of those two things together and you hear these national talking heads and you hear this national conversation about crimes going down, you should feel better. I'm reminded of a couple of weeks ago, Don Lemon, who's working for somebody now, interviews somebody on a boardwalk in New Jersey and says, well, how do you feel about the economy? And the guy looks at Don Lemon and says, the economy sucks. And Don Lemon says to him, no, it doesn't. The data says you should be feeling better. And the guy just looked at him and laughed. Well, that's what happens with crime. When you have these national talking heads about crime, that doesn't affect how you feel in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. That doesn't affect how you feel in, you know, North Nashville and Nashville. So it's a night and day difference the way these messages are transferred from the government to the people. And Tommy, my experience as a chief always was this. Crime data helps you explain a story, but if you lay on that as your measure of success, you're never going to be able to really reach all the people in your community.
So how, as a law enforcement, how does law enforcement off or law enforcement get a real accurate picture from?
That's a great question, Tommy. I probably participated in thousands of community meetings as a deputy chief and a chief. I required all of my field commanders to be in community meetings. There was actually a CompStat metric. How many community groups have you built this year? Not the ones you've been singing to the choir every year. Great people. But how many have you built? And by doing that, we knew very granular at the neighborhood level from direct conversations supplemented by data, not led by data, where commanders could say to me, hey, look, in East Nashville, we're doing better. People feel better. And sure enough, 6 months later, a year later, the data that the government produces, which is always late, would show better data. But we knew long before. And conversely, Tommy, sometimes we would be talking to neighborhoods and they would be saying, we don't feel safe at all. Well, the crime data doesn't look that way. And they'd say, I don't care what the crime data looks like. I'm telling you, we don't feel safe in our neighborhood. So you see it goes in both directions. The key is police leadership in those neighborhoods, in those meetings, solving problems, prioritizing problems, creating solutions are the better barometer than static polling data.
And we're going to take a break here, but as you say that you can, if you knew what was going to happen, you'd stop it before it happened. But I would think that it all comes down to communications between the officers and the community and law enforcement and the community. And once you learn or once that communication happens, then you can spot trends. You can spot the troublemakers, and maybe it could lead to a preventative aspect of that. We're talking to Ronald Surpass, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, picking his mind about crime as we do every Wednesday morning. Any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. Right now, time for traffic on WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief and head of other departments, pick his brain about crime every week. And, Chief, somebody texted in and said, you'll never be able to convince the people that are afraid to come to New Orleans, even if the statistics show that crime is down. I tend to think a lot of people might be more verbal about being afraid to come to New Orleans, but when an opportunity arises, they do come into the city. Thoughts?
Well, I think a lot of cities can be said like that, right? I mean, it's a personal decision where you move and where you go. But New Orleans is very negatively affected by this 40 years of being in and out of the top three murder capitals. That frightens people, as you would expect, and it frightens citizens, as you would expect. But when we were talking about how do you measure a department's success, independent polling of citizen satisfaction was always the most important measure. The 4 years I was chief, Tommy, believe it or not, our team had an average of 57% satisfaction done by independent poll. And after we left to where we are today, it's down to 45%. That affects how people feel about the city, right? You had 57% satisfied over 4 years of policing in New Orleans. And over the last 7 years, it's 45%. That changes how people interpret in a conversation like you just had. They might say to a friend, I don't feel safe here. You may not want to move here. But I think at the end, people are going to move where they want to move.
How much crime is retaliatory? And what I mean by that is, or the reason I ask that is...
Great question.
You might not even... This may have nothing to do with you at all. It sounds terrible that eight people got shot and you think that you could be a target or a subject, but unless you're in the wrong area at the wrong time. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to minimize it at all. Go ahead.
No. We've been witnessing this since the middle of 2010. That the use of a firearm in the 80s and 90s, it was one person, one gun, one bullet against one enemy. And unfortunately, for whatever reason in America over the last 20 years, these younger people are not interested in one bullet, one gun, one victim. They're interested in, I'm going to shoot the guy and I don't care who's around. Like we talked about last week, I didn't shoot you enough in Baton Rouge. Now I see you on Bourbon Street, I'm going to shoot you again. So that's what unfortunately happened with this horrible tragedy of the mother. She probably is in the wrong place at the wrong time with someone who does not likely have a legal right, or certainly didn't have a legal right to use a weapon that way. It's really fascinating that my cousin is an emergency room physician for the last 30 years now. If you called her and said, how many people who are beat up in your emergency room didn't know who did it? She would probably say to you, well, they all know who did it, right? Violent crime is normally very personal between people who have some relationship. But the shooting we saw of this terrible tragedy of this young mother of four who was pregnant likely was a spur of the moment, hot off, pop cap, just anger. And she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. We see this in Chicago every weekend with babies being killed, in New Orleans with babies being killed. And that to me is where police chiefs have always stood on the line of, look, we're not interested in a Democrat point, a Republican point, or a Second Amendment point. What we're interested in are people who have a legal, illegal use of a weapon. That's what the question is. Did they illegally use it? And that's where you see these horrible tragedies.
Yeah, a text comes in. We don't have any more time today, but we'll pick it up next week, perhaps. Somebody texted in and said, I was on a trial for a jury once, and two shootings that were on trial, a guy shot 100 rounds, only one bullet hit somebody. And that brings me to the point, and this is strictly a theoretical exercise, but the guns are out there. You can't get them back. Genie's out of the bottle. But if, for whatever reason, they had never gotten out there, what would crime look like in the United States or in New Orleans if, for example, people were limited to only a revolver and that's it? And I know I'm not trying to infringe on anybody's Second Amendment right or anything else. I'm just playing a what-if game. Ronald Surpass, our guest, will take a break. Come back. We'll talk to him next week. When we come back, we'll talk to Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, about the dreaded saltwater wedge. Also check in with the National Weather Service. Right now, time for WWL First News.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser-told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.